There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to this another special edition of this political party replay series. While I'm recovering in hospital, the live shows will return as soon as I can walk and sit down and write and all that. All the gubbins that you know, actual work goes into this show. You may be surprised to hear that, but it does. And it requires physical fortitude and mental fortitude, which I may not currently possess. I sound chipper because I've recorded this in advance, but today's episode is from 2017, and with someone I had on the show a few times, and is an absolute star, Anna Soubry. At this point, she was still a Conservative MP. And the story she tells about her experience of being a pro-European Remainer Tory MP, and this is from May 2017, are incredible. And she's fantastic anyway. Just funny, charismatic, outrageous, great fun. And on top of that, someone with very clear values and real passion and an ability to communicate that. Not just because of her previous experience as a journalist, but just there is something really special about her, and she expresses herself in that way. I love this interview. And this, I'd obviously been a fan in the run-up to this, but this, I was just like, oh my God, brilliant, brilliant fun. So, I'll stop waffling. From 2017, this is the then Conservative MP, Anna Soubry. Ladies and gentlemen, in this election special, we have a very special guest. One of the most outspoken politicians currently in British politics, and I truly believe one of the most likeable. This is someone who has only been an MP for a relatively short amount of time and has already made a huge impact. She represents an area of Nottingham that I used to live in called Broxtow, and I'm sure whether you'll remain or leave, Conservative, Labour or whatever, you will have been absolutely enraptured by the rise of tonight's guest. She's one of the funniest politicians I've ever met. I've done a number of interviews with her, and she's always superb. Please give a huge welcome to Anna Soubry.
Thank you. Oh, that's a big deal. Oh, shit, that's a bit worrying. I've got to live up to it now, haven't I?
That's all right, welcome to the show.
Well, I've never been here. It's brilliant, love it.
It's a nice place, isn't it?
It is, actually. I can't
nice
see
crowd.
But they all seem very nice, yeah. And the bar's very nice, and everything's nice.
Excellent. Firstly, election fever. Did you expect the Prime Minister to call an early election?
Good God, no. Nobody did. There was speculate. Right, obviously. You're recording.
Well, it's just, you know, off the record.
It may be the case that there was a group of MPs who may happen to be in a WhatsApp group that may actually sometimes actually, you know, sort of exchange ideas and messages, and that may speculate as to what was going on, because genuinely and truly nobody knew what was going on. And so people were saying maybe she's stepping down because maybe her husband is ill. Because, and then it was, maybe she's going to call a general election. Don't be fucking stupid. That may have been said. I mean, I don't know anything like that.
So this WhatsApp group, then?
Presumably,
Amber Rudd has this in mind when she wants to de-encrypt.
God, I know, yeah. So Amber Rudd is she's great, she's a friend of mine. And I once sent her a text. Obviously, I can't tell you what was in the text, but it may have related to the government's immigration policy, you know, and the word shit might have been in it or something like that. And it was, I think we should take this conversation offline. So I said, give me a call at home. And I shouldn't tell you these. She wrote, my phone is bugged, you know. It is bugged. I'm ringing from the house phone.
So that she makes us sound
can't.
A bit paranoid.
No, it's just that I never thought. But actually, yeah, all her phones, I suppose you think about it, it's a bit obvious. But yeah, they're all bugged. Well, not bugged, obviously. I mean, they're monitored.
There's a key difference between...
bugged and monitored.
Monitored.
So I've got this horrible cold. Oh, look, here's some nice wine. That will help my throat.
It's got grapes in it.
Oh, it's very good vitamin C. Yeah.
Good for you. So there's this WhatsApp group.
And no.
But how many MPs are on it?
Oh, no, this is just a group of very sensible MPs who believe that...
Just the two of you?
Just the two. No, it's Tories, so there's five. Whose Labour, unfortunately, be about two. But, no, it's just a... As you can imagine, there are a group of people who you think we should, you know, not have made the decision we made last June when the country took leave of its senses. But we are where we are, as we say. I said that at some meeting, actually, you were there. You know, I said, look, guys, you know, we are where we are. We've got to move on. And there are these people who were really angry. So I'm fed up with people telling me I've got to move on. And he turned out that he goes and demonstrates outside Dining Street every week. And he says, I get thumped. And you and I would go, I was a bit worried about this guy. Who thumps you? He wouldn't sort of say, just gets randomly thumped by people, apparently.
Well, that was it. He said, this was a debate at the Sun for Talk Radio. And Anna and I were both from the panel. And this guy gets up and says... I've been protesting against Brexit and I keep getting punched in the face. And I was outside Downing Street the weekend and I got punched in the face. And when am I going to stop getting punched in the face?
And I thought IDS is around. IDS goes around and just goes... I don't know. It was very odd.
Is that what Ian Duncan Smith does?
No.
Is he quite... Because he's a lot taller in the flesh, isn't he, Ian Duncan Smith, than he appeared on television? Markedly so, I would say. Ian Duncan Smith's quite a unit in the flesh. No?
Are we recording this on camera or just on audio?
Audio.
Oh, really? I mean, it's like... No. I never think of him as being particularly tall or physical in any way.
But he's prone to lash out physically, is he?
No, not at all. Not
Small
at all.
Small man syndrome.
No. I could possibly... No, he's all right like that. No, he's all right. No, he's...
It feels like there's something.
I should get into such trouble.
Oh, it'll be fine.
I mean, nothing changes.
Well, there's an election on. Like, no one's.
Nobody's paying any attention. Actually, it's really quite interesting because it looks like my party is not going to do daily announcements all the way through the election, which I actually think is brilliant because most people, by the end of it, are sort of sitting there silently wanting to take carving knives to themselves because it does get so intense and boring, doesn't it? And I might have been talking to a political correspondent today who said that... And Lily said she, which wouldn't be. It might have been a he or a she. And said, you know, thank God, because broadcasters go, oh, today's transport day. Everybody's going to be talking about transport. And, you know, all over Britain, people are going, oh, fuck. You know, because they don't sit... I mean, most people are not interested in politics. It's just the thing that's over there. And then occasionally they dip into it, and they do, but it does not consume their lives like it does most people here.
Yeah, but it's also thrilling and fascinating, isn't it? Yeah, you must enjoy it.
Oh, yeah, there's things I do enjoy, but at the moment I can't wait to get back to my constituency. I don't like being here.
What?
The atmosphere is... I like being here. It's a good job you don't live in my constituency, obviously, but and therefore can't vote for me. What I mean is I think the atmosphere in Westminster has not been great. I was hilarious last week when we all, you know, when the election was announced on the Tuesday, wasn't it, the Tuesday? And then, you know, your brain goes to porridge with all the things that's happened. Who could believe this last 12 months? And it was quite interesting that the number of hard Brexiteers who just gave me sort of evil looks... And I think it's because they were planning to make sure that people like me were going to be deselected in the years leading up to 2020. And all their plans have been thwarted.
So these hard...
I'm being serious, actually. I think they are. I think they really were a bit miffed about the whole thing.
So how many people are we talking about, then?
Well, but not that many. But there is a hard core of people who are hard Brexiteers.
And
it is more important than anything else in their lives. They live it, eat it, drink it, and... sleep it and everything else. I mean, it's a bit blooming sad.
But are we talking people like Peter Bone?
Oh, I couldn't possibly name anybody.
Philip Hollowbone?
I saw Philip today and he'd got a Union Jack bomber jacket thing.
I've seen that one.
I've never seen this.
He's in Team GB.
Have you seen his body? And I'd never seen...
No, have you?
No. And we were having our photographs taken with the Prime Minister. Yeah. And he had this bomber jacket on, and I just looked at it and went, pulled a face. And he said, I don't suppose you'd want to wear this, Anna, would you? And I said, well, the reason I wouldn't want to wear it is because it looks horrible. You know, it's shit design. It's just like a blue suit. What do you call them things? Awful. Not because I'm not patriotic. So I was sort of growling. So, and pretty sort of, Priti Patel was with me. And she just said, just leave it, just leave it. There's no point. There's no point. I said, no, but it really pisses me off, the idea that you can't be a patriot. You're not patriotic. If you, these people are just warped.
Unless you walk around in a Union Jack.
Unless you walk, I mean, come on. You know? And I was really worried that he'd walk in and have his photograph taken with Theresa May wearing this jacket. What was her reaction going to be? Who is this weird man? Oh, actually, it's one of my... Oh, it's you. I mean, come on. She's not going to do that, is she? Anyway, I went to have my photograph taken with her, yeah. And she was wearing a jacket almost identical in colour to this. Mm. Yeah, we actually had a little conversation about whether we should both wear the same jacket. And you could see that moment, which sometimes women do, when you think, actually, I'm being very woman here. Good. Let's not talk about clothes. Let's talk about other important issues of state and things like that, you know.
But she's into her fashion, isn't
she? Well, we kept it on. Sorry, go on.
It's something that she's talked about. She's done fashion shoots with her £1,000 leather trousers and things.
I don't talk about these things. I'm an old-fashioned feminist.
You brought it up.
Yeah, well... Yeah. Well, I just thought it was interesting we were wearing the same colour jacket. I mean, it could have been a man in the same colour jacket.
I've got a blue jacket on.
No, not like this, though. It's cool blue. But, no, but I just can't be doing all that stuff about who wears what and all the rest. I'm just not interested in
that. You've got very cool shoes on.
Ah, these are my canvassing shoes and my campaigning shoes, so I'll be out pounding the streets in these.
But are they they're sort of thick heeled? Are they practical for campaigning?
Oh, you need it, because you know where I'll be campaigning.
I do. Anna's... That sounds like there's something else going on. Anna's my mum's MP.
I am. And, I mean, it's a fantastic constituency and it's completely mixed.
In parts.
But it's now... But, I mean, now, at the moment, it's just all sort of shaken up. It's vote-wise, it's quite remarkable what's going on.
Well, to give people some context, it's some of you might know, it's the constituency of Broxton, Nottinghamshire, Beeston and parts of that near Nottingham University. A sort of classic marginal seat. So it went Labour in 97.
Absolutely.
And it went Conservative in 2010. And it's been Conservative in the last two. As classic marginal seats. But, what do you think will happen?
I mean, I think a lot of Labour will stay at home because they just can't go out and vote for Jeremy Corbyn, and they're not stupid. They know it's all about that. In some Labour seats, people will vote for the local MP, but actually I think the tide is so far out for Labour that even that one won't work for them. And so there'll be a lot of folk that will stay at home. There'll be some, obviously, of course they will vote Labour. But I mean, I'm telling you now, it's difficult finding them. They tend to be more middle-class people who will vote Labour. You know, the real Corbynistas, you know, that think he's the new Messiah and everything. No, honestly, they are. They have some very odd people out there. But there are. I mean, there's 400,000 of them in the Labour Party. That's why you've got this real problem. Because even if Jeremy goes, and he's a nice man. I mean, he's a bit like your nice sort of geography teacher that was a bit sort of, you know, flaky and a bit sort of chalk dust everywhere and everything. And that's a very long time ago, which shows how old I am. But I mean, he's not an unpleasant human being at all. But, you know, the trouble is, even if he goes, you still get to be lumbered with Jeremy Mark too. You'd be somebody like John McDonnell. Don't get me off on that one. But that's what will happen, because you've got all these 400,000 people who think, you know...
Before I inevitably now ask you about John McDonnell, let's just in terms of what happened in your constituency, and as a result, constituencies like yours, the battleground seats, do you get a sense that, as you said, a lot of Labour voters just won't vote or spoil their ballot or whatever? Do you get any sense of Labour voters coming to the Conservatives?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Even people that have voted Labour all their lives?
Yep.
What sort of stuff do they say?
They'll say things like...
I voted Labour all my life.
But yeah. I voted Labour all my life. I'm not bloody voting for them now. I'm going to vote for you lot. And then I get others who will say, I like Theresa May. I've not heard one bad word about Theresa May. Not one. And people are quite honest with you. And I mean, I've literally been to hundreds of houses in because we've got these county council elections on. So we've knocked on hundreds of doors and people do like her. And I think one of it is because she's actually the daughter of a vicar. That may sound a bit weird. It's just that there's nothing not kind of to like about that. There's no prejudice that you could have. And it,
unless you're
what a mess he's got into.
What would you have done if you were him?
Well, I can't imagine being him. Well, I'm sorry, I can't imagine having a faith that means that you can't say, well, of course it's not a bloody sin. I mean, I watched that on, you know, Catch Up, whatever, the interview with Kathy Newman, and I was embarrassed for him. It was so appalling and bad. I mean, God almighty, 2017, somebody can't get it right on... Oh, it's just appalling.
Because if Theresa May was asked the same question, that.
She's got great... Yeah, but she's... But he's now evangelical. I mean, I'm not into all of this stuff. I don't really understand it all, frankly. I thought, you know, God was meant to be loving and Jesus was meant to be loving and...
Oh, you've read the wrong bit.
I've obviously had.
Getting to the old school shit.
Absolutely. But that's right. And then this idea, oh, dear Lordy. And of course, I mean, one of the things that Theresa May did, she was the person who was the big believer in same-sex marriage.
But obviously...
But Farron's got himself into it. Anyway, they've got rid of this poor bloke, well, not poor bloke, but this bloke who was an anti-Semite. They got rid of him.
David Ward.
Yeah, he's gone.
Probably standing for the Labour Party.
No, they're not that desperate. Oh, yeah, maybe they are that desperate. But, and the gay sex, I mean, for God's sakes, 2017.
Do you think that the fact that Theresa May's a vicar's daughter is part of her popularity?
What, it's the fact that you can't put any label on her, that you got stereotype. All right. But it's not, you know, it's like, but obviously David Cameron, Old Etonian. And I mean, immediately you were coming in with a whole load of, frankly, often prejudices. But vicar's daughter, it's kind of, you know, well, that means that she wouldn't have had much money. She'd have had some good core values, kind of what's not to like. And she's not an evangelical like Tim Farron.
Do you get on well with Theresa May?
Yeah, she's all right. I mean, I don't know her very well, but then nobody does. I mean, she does her own thing and she keeps herself to herself and she gets on with it. And that's the other thing that's going down on the doorstep is people are saying, you know, just get... I mean, on Brexit, you know, obviously you and I both absolutely agreed on this. And on the doorstep, people are saying, oh, for God's sake, just let's get on with it. It's not a big deal on the doorstep. And that's with Remainers as well, because obviously I check people out as to how they voted in the referendum, because you want to know what people are thinking and, you know, is it affecting their vote?
So do you think, the Prime Minister's message is absolutely that this is effectively an election about Brexit, strengthen my hand in the negotiations, don't have a coalition of chaos. Do you think actually that message might change from the Prime Minister as the campaign goes on?
No, not at all. No, that is going to be the message through. And actually it's the backdrop. It's not, when you knock on people's doors, they're not saying, oh, I really want to talk about Brexit. They're not. They're just saying, yeah, life's fairly good. That's because we haven't had Brexit yet.
That's an interesting point. Do you think at the point, because the Tories seem peculiarly united, or at least disciplined for now, going into this campaign. I thought you were going to be sick then. but at the point of exit, does that then re-inflame the sort of Tory divisions on Europe, do you think?
No, I don't know, because nobody knows, Matt, what's going to happen. That's the truth of it. And if anybody had written down what's happened in the last 12 months, you would have said that's a great little story, but obviously it's the stuff of fantasy. And it's true. You know, here we are, whatever date it is, it's April. Who would have imagined that this time last year we would be 12 months on talking about, you know, losing the referendum, Cameron going, Trump getting elected, Theresa May Prime Minister, and having a general election. And it is absolutely stunning. The really great news is that Le Pen is not going to win. Thank Christ for that.
Do you think there are any...
And I do actually think that so-called populist tide has turned, and it's like other countries are coming to their senses. They get it and see it for what it is, which is unpleasant.
Are there any people on your side of the house that you think have any sympathies with Le Pen or would like to see her win?
Oh, I probably do.
Who?
Oh, I don't know. I'm not telling you.
But it's funny, isn't it? There seems to be, you know, if Brexit...
Actually, I don't know. I mean, it's... I mean, that horrible man, Aaron Banks. I mean, there's people like him who think she's marvellous, aren't there?
Well, that's it.
It's the UKIP-y nutty nutters that think that she's got...
Well, because she's anti-EU.
And like Trump, you see, Trump's got supporters. He's got a few supporters on my side.
But are they genuine full-blooded Trump supporters, or are they just people that are loyal to the Republicans?
I think there's a loyalty to the Republicans, but I think there's this idea that Trump represents this upsurge of populism, the downtrodden Rust Belt worker and all this other... And it is crap. What the frig does he know about it? Born with actually a gold spoon in his mouth and lives in some hideous gold-plated tower in Manhattan. What the hell does he know about real people in the real world? He doesn't. And this idea that he's anti-elitist. Oh, God, he's the embodiment of the elite, isn't he?
But it's about what people perceive the elite to be. And sometimes it's an elite of attitudes. People feel like there are certain things they can or can't say. They may perceive that, even if it's not true. And it's about, effectively, disrespect, in the end, is what it is that people like Farage and Trump are prepared to be rude, and that gives them the clothing of the rebel, even though they're as establishment as they come.
No, you're absolutely right. And the other thing is, you know, you talk about immigration, and you can give some people all the facts in the world, and they just don't want to hear it because they've got a view, they've got a prejudice, and they are not... You're just wasting your time, except unless you can dig in on the emotional level that they're operating on, which I quite like doing.
So how do you do that with a pro-immigration argument?
Well, one of the things I say to people, because they'll say, "Oh, you know, I've got, you know, all these immigrants," and you'll go, "No, I don't know what you're talking about. Sorry, what are you talking about?" And they'll go, "Well, you know, no, I don't know what you're talking about. Well, we've got all these immigrants," and I always go, "Really, where? In my constituency, where? Where are they?" And they'll go, "Well, you know, they're coming. Are they? Are they? Are they really coming? If they are coming, they're coming here to work. Oh, I don't know about that. Undercut wages. That's great." Then you give them the fact that that's not the case at all. But of course, they don't want the facts. And I play a really very strong card. It's very emotional, because a lot of this is emotional stuff. So I have to bat it back emotionally, and I'll get them to a place where they'll say something about EU and polls, and then I've got them. And I'll say, "Polls, really? You know why we've got polls in Nottinghamshire?" "Oh, no, why is that?" "Because they are the people whose grandfathers flew in the skies in the Battle of Britain, and more Polish men died fighting for the freedom of this country than any other nation." And I do it in that really passionate... And they
bomber jacket on.
Yeah. And, of course, then they go, oh, God, I didn't know that. Exactly. "So what's your problem?" "Well, I don't have a problem."
I felt emotional as you were saying.
Yeah, but that is the way you have to do it. You have to look him in the eye and say, "What's your problem?" And he's heard this story. This is a true story. So actually, I was on my way to the cricket about this time last year to Trent Bridge. And I did some campaigning in West Bridgeford, because it was a lot better than campaigning in my own constituency. And because I was... No, because... Well, it was. Ken Clark's the MP. Isn't it great news? He's... Brilliant. And he's standing again. So this man said to me, he said, "Well, you know, I'm going to vote Leave." And you ask these questions, you know what the bloody answer's going to be. And he said, "Well, you know..." I said, "No, I don't know why you're going to leave. All these immigrants..." And I do. "We're in West Bridgeford. There aren't any immigrants. What are you talking about here?" And he said, "Newark." And it's a true story. He said, "Newark." And I know Newark very well. He said, "Newark, you know, nobody speaks English in Newark anymore." And I said to him, I was really fed up, and I said, "That's crap, and you know it." And I said to you, this thing, you know when you say to your child, you know they do something wrong, you go, "Yeah, yeah, yeah." And they've done something, or they've said something which is really stupid, and you say, "That's stupid." And they go, "I know it is, really." And he went, "Well, yeah, all right." So I said, "Exactly, it's crap." And they said, "Well, they hang around on street corners drinking beer, they." And I said, "Oh, like, because of course, British born lads, they never hang around on street corners in Europe drinking beer." And I couldn't be arsed in the end, and I couldn't, and another time, so I wanted to go to the cricket.
You got a 4-pack of lagers and, to get on with.
But it's that, the reason I get so agitated is that nobody calls it out, and nobody challenges. So on the day of the referendum in Loughborough with the great Nicky Morgan, this woman said to me about, oh, I'm voting Leave, why are you voting Leave? Stupid question, I know the answer. All the immigrants, blah, 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 blah. And in short, because it's quite a long story which I won't bore you with, but it got to the point where she was talking, she was a teaching assistant in a school, and she was talking about the number of immigrants that didn't speak English. And she accepted that after 6 months, all these brilliant children were speaking English. And then I said, and I bet after what, 18 months, 2 years, they're all top of the class. And this is the tragedy. She went, oh, I'd never thought of it like that. I'd never thought of it like that. And that's the whole point. Nobody has gone out, made the argument, engaged with people, you know, eyeball them out. Say, right, what's your freaking problem? Let's get through it. Let's get the facts. Let's get the emotion and see the positive benefits of immigration. Oh, I'm on a rant.
No, but it's good because it's so rare to hear politicians, even conservative politicians, make passionate, emotional pro-migration cases. You know, it's always couched in the terms of, well, we need some, you know, it has to be controlled. It's always on the other side of the debate.
Absolutely.
You very rarely, in fact, I think 2005 is the only general election where a prime minister's really defended significant immigration in quite a hot campaign against Michael Howard. But really, my biggest frustration with the New Labour years was it was never really made
exactly
a big enough case of. And if you're going to let it happen, then defend it.
Exactly. And I mean, you know that there are some Labour MPs who I like very much. I have a lot of respect for them. And what makes me really cross.
You're seeing them again.
No. It is bad. It is bad. It is bad for a lot of these guys. But, I mean, you know, there's one who I like a great deal, and they do this thing where they... And people say, oh, these immigrants, I feel your pain. I mean, you don't say... I mean, yeah, you're right, they undercut wages. No, they fucking don't. And you don't appease people. It's like, you know, you're frightened of actually having an argument and having a discussion with people because they're your people. No, you don't. You damn well make the argument and call it out. And overwhelmingly, when you do it, you win it.
What hope do you have that the Conservative Party leadership will ever adopt the sort of position that you have on immigration?
Well, I think they're beginning to move, aren't they, now? Because we're told, actually, we're still going to have free movement of people for a number of years after we leave the EU. They've accepted that we need all these workers, not just in the fields of Lincolnshire, and picking the vegetables and picking the fruit and all the rest of it, but we also need people coming in from other countries to fill jobs. We've got 750,000 vacancies in this country. That's the reality of it. And you know, I just take that very robust approach, and I think that slowly, slowly, people are beginning to get it and understand it. And what they need to get and understand it, obviously, but it's only when business actually stands up and makes the arguments to them. And it's like my other half, who has he's involved in a business that has potatoes and daffodils, so they need workers, obviously, to pick
just
the potatoes and all that. Yeah, that's all they do, potatoes and daffodils. Truly. Oh, don't you want to know? But they do. And as Neil says, you know, because he stopped throwing things at the radio.
Potatoes.
Well, no. Well, you know, through this whole thing, because people would say things, you just sort of lob things. He's so angry, like a lot of us. And as he said, who's going to do the bringing work? Who do you think's going to do the work? And that's why we do actually control immigration in this country. Because the market actually controls it. And as soon as unemployment goes up, the number of migrant workers goes down. I mean, it's a bit chuffing obvious, isn't it?
But, I mean, this is in the context of Brexit, isn't it, where we're trying to get as close to free movement as we've got under the EU. Do you think we'll ever have a Conservative leader talking as passionately as you have about immigration, about how important it is, and about, as you say, the emotional pro-immigration argument?
Don't know.
Would you ever stand for the Tory leadership?
Me? Oh, God, I'm too old now.
But you're not.
Of course I am. Far too old. And also, I don't know. I mean, Theresa May's going to be there for ages. And I think she'll be all right. She's going to do a good job. She's going down storm on... I actually said to her today, it's like I'm talking to him and ignoring all of you. Do forgive me. But I actually said to her today, you're going down a bomb on the doorstep. And I don't think that was the right thing to say, was it?
How did she react?
I don't know, because by that time I'd been shuffled out of the room.
You've been tasered by a
mad woman. Get this woman out, you know. I meant to say, I got that wrong. But no, I think, you know, I'm sorry, but, you know, the Labour Party is in such a dire strait, set of straits that it's basically going to be buggered for a long time.
So when you talk to Theresa May,
and obviously you've said that she's quite a private person. She keeps herself to herself and all the rest of it. But your relationship with her is a professional one as well. She's the leader of your party in your country. You served as a minister under David Cameron. Do you think you would serve as a minister again under Theresa May?
Don't know.
Would you like to?
I think it's unlikely. Well, I mean, I've got strong views. So, you know, I said in Parliament that having voted for Article 50, so having voted against everything I've ever believed in, because I promised my constituents that I would honour the result, I then said, I'm going to be true to what I believe in from now on. I've done that bit, and from now I'm going to do what I believe. Well, I'll be true to my principles. I had this bizarre conversation with this woman on Sunday in Trowell. He knows where Trowell is. Great. That was a very nice place, Trowell. And she said to me, she said, what? So somebody said, look, they've got a problem down there with this woman. She's not going to vote for you. She's a Conservative, but she says she is. And she's not going to vote for you. So I go down there. And she said to me, you're always moaning on him. You are. You're trying to thwart it. You're trying to thwart all this Brexit. And I actually said to her, I said, I voted for the bloody thing.
For Article 50?
Yeah, well, I said, no, I said, I voted for the bloody thing, or ruddy thing. And she said, oh, I was behaving myself. And she said, and she could see her face thinking, hang on, what are you on about? And I said, the Article 50, the triggering, I voted for it. And then she said, well, that's because of the whips, isn't it? I told that to the chief whip, and he just burst out into hysterical laughing. And I said, no. I said, excuse me, it's me. Me. I voted for it. I said, even it was though it was against everything I've ever been that I've ever thought of. I said, and I did it because I made a solemn promise to you in 2015 that I would honour the result. And she was completely silent at that point. And I thought, oh, I'm all right here. And then, so I explained all that to her, and she said, oh, I didn't know any of that. I said, well, that's because of the Daily Mail, which obviously you read far too much of. Have I told you my other story about this man? This is absolutely a true story, right? So I'm out delivering leaflets in a place called Beeston, which you will know. Beeston Rylands. Like Beeston Rylands. Down the Rylands. No, down the Rylands.
Is that the one, the three fishermen pub?
Yes, the Jolly Fisherman. And then there's the canal at the bottom, you see. So you go down the Rylands. You go down the Rylands, Duck. We hope you haven't got a problem. Go down the Rylands. So around the Rylands.
Shane Meadows film.
That's where he did all his... anyway, so I'm doing out all these leaflets, and there's this man creosoting his fence in his garden. So I always say, you're right then? And he goes, yeah, I'm all right. I said, I've got a leaflet for you. So he goes, what's that then, Duck? So I said, well, it's actually, it's a Tory leaflet. And he went, oh, right, well, I don't normally vote Tory. So I said, well, have a look at it. And I said, so how do you vote normally then? He said, me, he said, vote Labour. He said, lifelong Labour. He said, whether I'm going to vote Labour, not sure. He said, mind you, he said, RMP, you know, he said, she's a right. Bloody bitch, she is. So I said, it's me. I am her. And he went, well, you don't look like you. Well, you've lost weight. He was truly, truly mortified. I can imagine. He said, I'm ever so sorry. I said, don't worry about it. And then he actually said to me, he said, why are you all for leave? I said, what? He said, you know, you're a leaver, aren't you? I said, I'm the chief bloody Ramona, me. I said, I wanted to say to him, but I didn't have the guts to say, you ought to read the Daily Mail more. But I just saw that. RMP, she's a right bloody bitch. I did tweet that out, actually. I thought it was hilarious.
Do you account much of that on the doorstep? Do you ever get into arguments?
No, you should never get into an argument on the doorstep.
But some people just want one, don't they? I mean,
actually, people are quite good. I mean, the only time people are really rude... Well, I remember once being out somewhere and handing this leaflet, and this man stood there and he said, what's this then? Oh, Tories, he said. And he started ripping it up and put it in his bin, and I go, I could have had that back. And he went, well, it's nice to meet you, don't you? Talk shit, but don't worry about it. So get that, which is fine. I don't have a problem with that. But the worst ones are the middle... The only people who slam the door in your face are middle-class houses. And they look at you and they think, oh, you're a Tory. Obviously, you're intellectually. And they go, no, thank you. Bang. And you slam the door. They're the worst ones. And, you know, other people, they'll say to you, oh, I don't agree with you, you talk crap, but it's nice to see you. And the other thing, they do say, you're not as fat as you look on the telly. Because I used no, but I used to read the, you know this. I used to read the news in Nottingham on
on the telly, on
Central.
Not just in the streets.
No.
Oh yeah.
On the telly. So I used to read the news, and I used to be a reporter, but I used to read the news, and so a lot of people still remember me. So I've been doing a lot of work in Eastwood.
Yeah.
Now, Eastwood is where D.H. Lawrence was born. And it's a proper Labour town. And I'm amazed. You see, this is why I'm amazed at the reaction. It voted probably 70% Leave. So you'd think, because Ashfield voted 70% Leave, and Eastwood is in the borough of Broxtowe, but it will have been about 70%. And you would have thought I'd have got a lot of aggravation. And in fact, I don't. Bizarrely, people say, you're right. What are you doing here, Anna? Why are you here? Why aren't you down in Broxtowe? I said, well, I just come up here to help this chap. And they go, oh, it's nice to see you, Doug. And I'll say, really? So come to this, because we've got these county council elections. Do you think you might vote for this chap? He's a Tory. And they go, yep, I'm voting Tory. Honestly, I can't tell you what it's like.
Because Tories are owning Brexit, basically.
I think a lot of it is that. Because they know she's going to deliver on it.
I mean, if it wasn't for Brexit, let's say...
And Corbyn got it so wrong. But then he's completely caught, isn't he? He's caught between his core vote that voted out and his more middle-class intellectuals that voted Remain.
Well, the fact that he's an outer, really.
And yet he's an outer because he's a weird, you know, he's a proper socialist. And so he doesn't know whether he's Arthur or Martha. He's all over the place. And I'm not partisan, as you know, Matt, but, you know, No, I'm not. I mean, full credit to some of your... I mean, I saw Tom Blenkinsop today, who's the MP, and I'm very sad to see a very able young man like him leaving Parliament for no other reason than he just can't be in the Labour Party anymore. And that is very, very sad. But it has to be said, the thing about people like Corbyn is they do not resonate at all with your traditional working-class Labour voters. He couldn't go round Eastwood. He couldn't go down the Rylands. I mean, you know, you talk about the Outer Mongolia basket weavers and all this sort of stuff. And, you know, and people would say to him, what the fuck are you talking about, Jeremy? And it would freak the guy out.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
I mean, obviously, you're slightly partisan because you know it comes to the blue mass, but I take your point. I mean, I think a lot of people are quite cynical when Conservative MPs like yourself talk about caring about the state of the Labour Party or wanting a proper opposition and just presume that you're kind of laughing at the whole thing. I mean, for you...
No, not at all.
How serious is it to you to have a functioning opposition and
absolutely
to have a
critical.
Labour Party specifically that you can respect on?
Absolutely critical. And that was all the thing about, as it was all unfolding after the referendum. A classic, because when you're a backbencher, you've got limitations on what you can do, certainly compared to the official opposition. So one very good example is that you have this thing called opposition supply days. So the opposition can decide what the topic of debate is going to be. And they decided it was going to be asking for a paper about Brexit. and what it was all going to be. And they forgot, actually not just forgot, the key people didn't understand that the paper you needed to ask for was a white paper, because a white paper's got more significance than blah, blah, blah. And they actually just had a motion that called on the government to produce a paper. I mean, it's pitiful. Absolutely pitiful. And we won that because we all, you know, there's this gang of us, and we all said we will vote for this Labour motion. And so the government conceded that they would produce a paper, literally could have been, and I thought it was going to be, one side of A4, a paper about Brexit, you know, our futures, our children and our grandchildren's. And that's why we had to battle on to get the white paper. And that's why I have a lot of time for Theresa May, because to her credit, when she announced in the House that the government would give a white paper, I mean, they would give a white paper. I mean, you know, it sounds like it's a big deal. I mean, which it isn't, sort of normal stuff. It shows the state we're all in. But anyway, and she gave the credit, she said, oh, and as the member for Broxton had asked for this white paper. She didn't need to do that, which was good of her. But that's the job of the bloody opposition. That's exactly what they should have been doing, holding the government's feet to the fire, demanding all this stuff. It's not revolutionary to ask for a deal which is about this country's future, one of the most important things that we've ever done, that we might actually have a chuffing vote on it.
In terms of your...
I mean, it's not revolutionary, is it?
In terms of your conservative values, then, so how blue are you? You know, in a different world, if the Labour Party was to become resurgent, or there was a new centrist party that was pro-European and in 5 or 10 years' time was campaigning on having a referendum to rejoin the EU against a Conservative Party that was still full-bloodedly Brexit, would you be tempted to join that?
No, I mean, I'm an old Ken Clark Tory. I always have been. My politics hasn't changed in 40 years. I mean, little bits of it have, but not much. I've always been very socially liberal. And I'm fairly dry economic. I'm just like Ken. I don't know whether it's a Nottinghamshire thing, but I am. And as I say, my politics have barely changed since I first got involved as a student.
But if British politics becomes Ulsterised, as in a way it has in Scotland, where the defining issue is, are you pro-union or are you pro-independence? If England and Wales goes that way and it becomes, are you pro-European or are you anti-European? And that really hardens as a thing. You're then in a party that you sort of fundamentally disagree with.
Well, I'm not so sure, you know. I mean, remember that the manifesto that we've been elected on for God knows how many decades has always been pro-EU. It's only because of this referendum. The majority of Tory MPs supported Remain. And it's the result of the referendum. It's the fact that we lost the darn thing that's buggered everything up. And it has.
Did you talk to David Cameron during that period and try and sort of advise him against it?
What, about having the referendum?
Yeah.
No. I mean, I didn't know him very well at that time, and that's not the point. I thought having a referendum was a good idea. I genuinely thought it was a good idea. I thought we'd win, obviously. You're not going to ask for something that you think you're going to lose. And I thought the British people, sensible, moderate people, will know and understand it's in their economic interests to stay in the EU. I genuinely thought we would win.
So did it change your opinion?
I was wrong. And we should never have had the referendum. But I honestly didn't know. No, but I honestly thought it was the right thing to do, because I thought it would lance the boil, settle the matter, shut everybody up, get on with it. And I was wrong.
Did it change your opinion of the British people?
No, I don't think so. No, it's a really good question, actually. Oh, I don't know. No, I think it was... No. The problem was essentially that Remain was crap. I'm sorry, stronger in that, all of that stuff. Look, for me, how could I campaign? Because my party was not in one side or the other. I got no access to all the data. I'd not got much of an enthusiasm. Labour only did their own thing, and that was pretty pitiful. And so what could you do? So you went out on, you stood around in town centres, got quite a lot of abuse, because immigration was the big trigger. That was the big thing. And the terrible mistake that was made was that people like me were specifically told, when it became that big thing, we are not talking about immigration.
And that came
and
from
that's
Downing
a
Street.
Fact, absolutely.
That came from the heart
absolutely
of Downing Street.
Absolutely right. We're not talking about it. And the other thing was, I used to sit in the cabinet, the inn cabinet, and my thing was, I said it on everyone. I said, I'm really worried about where Labour is. And it was every time it was, Labour's fine. It's all fine. And I thought, it's not effing fine, because I know what's going out there in the real world. And Labour's not getting it together. And if they don't deliver their vote, we're absolutely jiggered. And it's true. That was what we needed, and they couldn't deliver it.
So that sort of diktat from Downing Street, not to mention immigration. I mean, is that proof? Do you think that Cameron put the interests of his party ahead of?
No, it wasn't, because this is political tactics gone completely wrong. They thought no, don't talk about about immigration. Just talk about the economy. So they applied all the sort of, if you like, the rules that had won us the general election to the referendum, not realising that it was completely blooming different, totally different.
At what point did you realise the referendum was lost?
It was the end of May when I was out in Nottingham city centre, and I've never seen anything since the 70s. And I'd go up to people and I'd say, EU referendum, in or out? And they'd go, out, I'm out. All these immigrants, get them out. It was that bad, Matt.
I mean, in terms of what that referendum...
And I'd not seen that, as I say, since the 70s.
In terms of what that referendum unlocked, how quickly do you think that will dissipate? Or is that a sort of rationale that we're going to have to live with that's going to fester?
What, the anti-immigration thing?
Yeah. Because it legitimised a lot of it in some people's
eyes. Well, of course it did. I mean, hate crime is still running higher than it was this time last year, still running higher, and because it has enabled people to say, like the man in talking about Newark saying that nobody speaks English in Newark, it enabled people to say the most stupid and nonsensical things. And the trouble is nobody's calling it out and challenging it.
But the culture, and nobody's now, the culture is not the just the referendum we've had in this country. This whole culture of fake news and alternative facts is that people aren't exposing themselves to a wider variety of opinions. They're narrowing in, whether it's echo chambers on social media and the algorithms that enable you to only listen to things you agree with, or cherry-picking even more so with media that's even less rigorous than the Daily Mail and less rigorous than the tabloids, with blogs like The Canary or, you know, Breitbart or whatever it is, where people are... It's so little news, it's basically homeopathic now. It's just all opinion. That's just going to get worse.
My view on this is that the future, this is very corny, I know, but it's true, is youngsters and it's children.
Children are the future.
They are. No, but that's what we have to do. And so one of the things that
Some of them are real little shits.
David can't say that.
Oh, they're brats, some of them. Someone needs a good art. Oh, crikey. Brings out the conservative in me when I say.
No. I mean, if I get re-elected, one thing I want to do is actually, and there's a number of other key players in our county who want to do the same thing, where we go into schools and we talk about our history as a county and why, and therefore you talk about it, why immigration has been positive and beneficial and so on and so forth. And that's what we have to do.
So a sort of new level of political education in schools that is, what, non-partisan, or where you allow...
Well, of course it would be non-partisan, but you would teach...
Do you allow different groups to come in because...
No, you would part of that citizenship is to explain to people about the richness and the diversity and how that came about, whether it's the Polish fighter pilots, whether it's the Ugandan Asians that were booted out by Idi Amin that came into large parts of... I mean, I remember in Worksop where I think we had three black families in the whole of Worksop, and this family came in from Uganda who'd been booted out, and because everybody talked about it because they hadn't seen an Asian family. And you need to explain how that happened, and we gave people a home, and they were brilliant and wonderful and contributed. You have to do all that stuff.
Do you think you'd be allowed to do
that? It's not rocket science. Yeah, why wouldn't you be able to do it? We're meant to be teaching people citizenship. Yeah, that's what it's about.
This is that you launch a campaign like that, and people say, oh, you're trying to politicise children. You know, they're
not trying to politicise them, I'm teaching them their history. If they happen to take away a better view of migration and immigration, what's not to like about that?
Well, I agree with that, but there are...
But no, but teach, you know, if people under, like my story... What did you say? I didn't hear that.
About 52% of people that might take a different view and say, actually,
no, lots of
immigration depression.
No, we do know that amongst Leave, a lot of Leave people did not vote because of immigration. But it was an issue, and it still is an issue out there. What's wrong with teaching children about their history? And then they begin to understand and be outward-looking. We're meant to teach children about different religions, which is meant to make us more tolerant and not just knowledgeable, but also that's part of tolerance and so on. So why not about the history of a particular county?
I mean, you talk about sort of tolerance and abuse and things. I was in 2 months before to ask you about this, but I've started now. You've had some... not just the sort of comedic abuse you've had on the doorstep, but serious stuff recently, where you received a death threat that was...
I've had two. One went to prison this week.
Someone who said that he was going to Joe Cox you.
Well, there were two. There were two. There was a guy who rang the office, the constituency office, and made horrible references to Joe Cox, and my team had to take those calls, and that's the one that went to prison this week, and he got 8 weeks... Which, as an old criminal barrister, which I also used to be, that's a very strong sentence, actually. Because it wasn't an actual threat, but it was a reference. So it was under the Malicious Communications Act. And he got 8 weeks, immediate custodial sentence, and he pleaded guilty as well. And then there's another one who did a tweet, and they're still working out whether they're going to charge him or not.
And that was along a similar line.
Yeah, and it was in the same week as well. It did scare me. I was a bit sort of, well, I was wobbled by all that. It was not pleasant. But it was the staff. I mean, you know, they shouldn't have to take this shit, should they?
No, not at all, but the threats against you.
Yeah, I was a bit wobbled that week. I didn't like that.
And do you think there is a more febrile atmosphere on the streets of Britain towards politicians than there was maybe even 10 years ago?
No, because you know what? One of the really weird things is that people will often say, well, my MP, you know, is really good. They do a really good job. No, obviously not. Well, not down the Rylands. And so there's that. And then they never then sort of then think, well, actually, all around the whole of Britain, there are all these people talking about their MP being all right and then slagging them all off as a group, if you like. So, I don't know. I just think what people got really hacked off with is when you get this spin and people can't answer a question. I mean, I know I listen to people and they don't answer a question straight and you start to sort of sling things at the telly or at the radio because you say, oh, just answer the frigging question.
But you must have been in the position where you've had to, particularly as a minister, where you've had to evade a little bit.
Sometimes, but not that much. I always remember I was asked by, I mean, it's not exactly exciting stuff, but there was a big debate at one point, well, probably in the Westminster bubble, about plain packaging and cigarettes.
Yes.
And I remember my civil servant saying, now, on no account whatsoever, Minister, must you give your own opinion. You mustn't do that. And I was being interviewed by John Humphreys on the Today programme, and I can remember it now, so I was sitting at the kitchen table, and he said, so, Minister, do you believe in the plain packaging of cigarette packets? And I knew he was thinking that. I said, well, you know, we have to consider. I went, I do, actually. I think it's a really good idea. And there was this complete silence in the end of... complete silence. Because I'd actually... And he went, right, OK, right, fine. And it was, you know, it was very disarming. But, yeah, sorry. We need more of that. You know, people aren't stupid. They know when you're prevaricating. They know when you, you know, is gay sex a sin? How many times do you have to ask the question without getting a proper, nearly said a straight answer?
Why haven't I done that joke before?
Well, you do it better than me.
Oh, we're doing that joke tomorrow night at whatever gig I'm doing. Thank you very much. I promised that we'd come back to John McDonnell. You were on Question Time. One of the best episodes of Question Time in the modern era. And it was you and John McDonnell and Alistair Campbell.
Oh, my new friend. I've got all these new friends. Alistair Campbell.
It was an absolute rumble of an episode.
Oh, yeah.
And you turned on John McDonnell and backed Alistair Campbell up over him. In fact, you probably got more stuck in than Alistair Campbell did.
No, they got stuck in the green room afterwards. I ran off because I knew that with... because I don't do that stuff where I say something but can't say it to somebody's face. Mm. And I thought, don't... just go, because I knew I'd go over to him and give him, you know. a bit of a verbal. And I thought, no, don't, just go. And apparently Campbell did, and they got started. It was pretty much nearly fisticuffs and everything. But, yeah, I just think he's an absolute... I think he's a grade one disgrace of a human being. One, because he's an IRA apologist. Secondly, and he really is, and he just those weasel words which say, if I've offended somebody, I apologise. No, actually, don't give me that shit. Retract what you said. Not this weasel words about if I've offended you. Yeah, that's just one thing. Also, because he basically made threats against Esther McVeigh, which was bang out of order. Yeah. And thirdly, I've got friends who are Labour women MPs who've had the most appalling abuse on social media from so-called Corbynistas. And he could have stopped that, and he bloody hasn't. He's a disgrace. Oh, God, I'm going off on a rant again.
So have you ever sort of dealt with him other than on Question Time?
No. Well, he's one of those sort of characters you never even see around the place.
Because he does have that habit when he has his words repeated back to him, like, I think it was honouring people through the bullets in the ballot box, or whatever
that
the phrase
was. That
was
it.
Through the history of Irish republicanism. When he's then presented with these words, he does that thing where he'll talk deliberately, quietly. Like
yeah, that's right.
And I was just trying to fight for peace in bloody Northern Ireland. I'm through gritted bloody teeth here. You know? And that's a weird thing he does. When he was on Andrew Marr, what camera am I on here? What bloody camera am I? I've never seen anyone clearly so ready to scream, having to contain themselves as much as John McDonnell does. I mean, he's quite a phenomenon in Parliament, isn't he?
Not at all.
But in terms of how
he's got no presence, he's got no charisma, he's got no abilities at the dispatch box.
He's
a non-event.
But
you know, you see other people at the dispatch box and you admire them. They can speak well and they've got... Ed Balls was great at the dispatch box, and you could see when he got in, you know, he loved it, and he would be over here and over there and take an intervention and everything else. And, you know, so there's an admiration for that. Of course there is. McDonald, complete non-event of a human being and everything. Non-event. Sorry, but...
But that's remarkable, isn't it, when you see someone like that who is a totemic figure in the Labour Party now, unable to command respect even on the immediate bench behind.
Oh, yeah, and of course, because when you sit in the House of Commons, and you look across, and like today, you know, you looked at the faces of Chooker, Rachel... there was a group, Chooker, there was Rachel Reeves, I think Chris Leslie was there. And I like Chooker and Moona hugely. I really do like Chooker. And their faces were just leaden, they were just solid, sitting behind Corbyn as he was doing his thing. And they're all like that. And then the next thing that happens is there's a breakout of the phones and the iPads, and they're all on their phones going... like that, just... It is
Candy
dreadful.
Crush.
Yeah. Get me out of here, you know. So it's not good.
But that's what you see when you look over there. When people look over at the Conservative bench and they see you sat up in that back corner with Tim Lawton and... What's it you call yourselves? Rough Trade?
Yeah, with a rough crew. No, yeah, something
rough
like
trade.
That. Well, we don't call ourselves that.
Tim Lawton does.
Well, it's Timmy's problem, not
But there's what I'm getting at is you're in a group of MPs.
Yeah, we are loud and we are as a group of us and we are loud.
Quite naughty.
It was quite funny because when George Osborne walked in for the first time after, you know, obviously being sacked, and you could see this moment when he looked up and he thought, now where am I going to sit? And we all went... It's true. And you could see him thinking, shit. And there was nowhere else. We were going, come on, George, we'll look after you. And I was, come on, come and sit here.
Because at you're the thinking, back of the bus.
I can't get out of it. I can't. He got nowhere else to go. But he did. He actually has come and sat with us.
But so this. Who else is in that group then? You, Tim Lawton.
So it runs. There's Keith Simpson.
Yes.
And then there's Tim Lawton. Then there's me. And then there's different characters in different seats at different times, but there'll be Alex Shelbrooke, who's that enormous man from Yorkshire. He comes in because we all go, oh, fuck, don't get him to come and sit. He'll take up two seats. Okay, Alex, go down there. Oh, no, he's going to come. So there's Alec and then Nikki and Alistair Burt, and then Simon Burns always sits there, and Caroline Noakes. And then there's other people who have sat there, and you can see them thinking, oh, my God. God, this is awful, and they never come back.
Stop being in with the ultras. Stop being in the away end. So
we're allowed, and then you've got other. So we're quite a mix in a way, because Carl McCartney, who's from Lincoln, he always comes up there.
What do you say to me? Because a lot of people say, "Oh, Prime Minister's questions is too rowdy," and the way these
it is rowdy, it's appalling.
And Burko gets very annoyed with you all.
He only gets annoyed if he's not the star.
But can you justify your behaviour in the Commons?
No. It is bad. No, it is. I am conscious. But it's quite interesting that my eldest daughter... That's dreadful. Just not long after I got elected in 2010, my oldest daughter came in, and she'd done all this thing, and she'd gone, oh, it's disgusting. Yeah, it's just appalling. And she came in, and she was in the public gallery. Yeah. And obviously, I met her afterwards, and she said, oh... So it was absolutely amazing. You can't understand and appreciate the atmosphere, because it is much smaller, much more intimate than people ever imagine. And she thought it was amazing. And that's the reaction from people, is when they actually experience it. So you think about it, where else is there in the world where, you know, the leader of that country literally is standing there and the leader of the opposition is not that far away and they are, you know, held to account? Well, that's the theory. Unfortunately, that's not been happening for a long bloody time.
No. I mean, I love the atmosphere of the Commons. I think it needs to be a bit rowdy. I think you can't justify it.
No, I think a lot of people get a bit hacked off with it, actually.
Have you ever shouted anything that you've regretted?
No. And I was accused of using foul language. And I do sometimes use bad... Oh, I do use bad language. There's certain words I never use. And I never use the C word ever anywhere.
Conservative.
Somebody over there said that. Get their name and number.
You wouldn't use that in Parliament anyway, would you?
But I mean, I never swear in the chamber. So I feel like I'm in court. But I never used to shout in court and misbehave in court. But I mean, you are conscious. But then sometimes you forget that there are these things called cameras, because they're quite discreet. And you forget that actually things are being broadcast.
So what sort of things would you say then? Oh, shut up.
No, actually, I don't say shut up. It's things like, I'm just trying to think, what the sort of things you'll say is, change the record. I mean, that's really exciting, isn't it? Oh, change the record. Or look behind you, we say to Jeremy, look behind you. Look behind you, look behind you. And then Angus Robertson stands up from the SNP and there's this, which is an awful thing to have to put up with.
Tim Farron gets that.
And Tim Farron. Actually, I didn't used to be that rude to Tim Farron. But with Angus Robertson, the joke today was I'm shouting out, Tory Gain. Because he's, well, you never know what might happen. Because he's in Aberdeenshire.
Yeah, in Murray. It was very close. I think it was only sort of 100 votes. Mm-hmm. Difference between leaving Remain in...
And Ruth Davidson's done a cracking job, so, you know, it's all changing in Scotland. I mean, obviously, it's still going to be huge numbers of SNP, but it could be that Labour lose their... And can you believe we're even having this conversation? Labour could actually lose their only MP in Scotland. It's phenomenal. Because I used to live in Scotland, so I know a little bit
about
it. Well, I was... Oh, it's a long story, and this audience will go mad if they haven't heard it. But I was the honorary president of Stirling University. So I stood as an English Tory and got elected at the most left-wing university in Scotland. This is obviously, you know, before most of you lot were born. So it was back in the early 80s. And so I got a job in a wonderful place called Alloa, and I worked on a newspaper. I did that for a year. Then I ended up in Aberdeen. And I worked in Aberdeen for Grampian for 2 years, Grampian TV.
So then
that shut you up, didn't it?
I did just want to return to that sort of naughty corner of Parliament, because that seems to me, whenever Conservatives laugh, that's the bit that Corbyn always looks at. He always seems to be looking almost. I wonder if he's...
Well, it's because we're the noisiest bit.
But has he ever eyeballed you directly? Or
no. And actually, I had a conversation. See, he's a nice man. I don't say he's not a nice man at all. And I was standing getting some coffee in PCH, which is Portcullis House. And I was in the queue and he was there. And so we started chatting, and we started talking about the hours that Parliament works, and he said, oh yes, it needs to be more family friendly and everything. And then I said something about being back on the back benches, and he said yes, he said, and you're very good at that. I got an endorsement from Jeremy Corbyn.
Don't tell your constituents, for God's sake.
But no, but I mean, you know, we just chatted away. So it's just right. Like your geography teacher, really, you know. And off he got, and he got that little black cap thing on, and Seamus was lurking in the background. He looks like a seriously nasty piece of work. And then, you know, we got our coffees, and off that was it. Off we went.
Just a special moment with Jeremy.
It was just weird.
It's like something off a sort of internet dating advert or something. It's kind
of... Now you're being sick. But, yeah, I just think the guy's way out of his depth. Well, he never wanted this. You know?
No, that's true.
He never wanted it. And it is really sad. Because, you know, you do want good, strong oppositions. And to see a great party, and the Labour Party is a great party, but to see it in the state it's in, Matt, is bad stuff.
It is. Well, let's try and find some levity in the room by opening it up to audience questions. So we'll take three or four. If you can ask for quick questions, please, and quick answers, and we'll wrap up.
Right, OK, right, good.
Possibly can. Good. Yes, the lady at the back there, just wait, we'll get a roving microphone to you. Yes, the lady with her hand in the air, she's still there? Yes, and let us know your name, and a quick question, a quick answer, please.
Hi, I'm Julia. I was just wondering who you thought the Labour leader would be that the Tories would be most afraid of.
Oh, Yvette Cooper. Question. Yvette Cooper.
Oh.
Yvette Cooper is, and you know what she asked a question, I think it was the other week?
That's pre-MQs.
Stunning. I think Yvette has really grown, and I think that if there is, in stature and ability and everything else, and,
height.
You know... No, never mind, you know what I mean. And I think that if there's anybody who's going to take on this lot, it'll be Yvette Cooper. And
this lot being your lot?
No, the Labour Party, you know, they get rid of the Corbyn, all that stuff, and Yvette Cooper, and she will be a formidable opponent. She's very good.
Yvette Cooper gets Anna Soubry's vote in the next leadership contest.
No, don't vote. That's the thing. She's a nice human being.
Oh, yes, there's a chap over there waving. We'll get a... if anyone else just had to indicate, so I know where to come to next. Yes, down the front. And anyone on the balcony would like to ask one. Yes, OK, cool.
Hello.
Hello.
I just wanted to say, I've not been to Nottingham in my adult life, and I understand you have some of the best and most historic pubs in England.
Yes,
to Jerusalem.
That's not my question. Yeah, exactly, that Jerusalem. But no, that's not my question. I just wanted to say, I'm a Tory member, and I was a Leave voter, but... It's nothing to do with immigration. My actual point on immigration was that I don't think we should be prioritising anyone from the EU over some talented doctors from India or IT people from anywhere in the world. I mean, I have a very libertarian view on that. I would like to see England being not protectionist, but going out there and being free trading the world. My opinion was always that the EU was a protectionist bloc, and perhaps I'm slightly silly and idealistic, but as your stance on things, and obviously you're on the free trading kind of thing, now that you know you've lost, can you champion people like me who voted for Brexit that was all about immigration around the world and about free trade around the world? Can we go for that kind of thing now and not a closed England kind of Brexit?
Well, you might be right, but the trouble is, yeah, that's not what a lot of other people voted for, and unfortunately... it's at large that people are going to be very disabused, like you, thinks that there are going to be more people coming in from countries like India. I mean, sorry, but get real. I mean, well, it's true, isn't it? I mean, you know, people... I think it is moving. I think the government's moving on this, but the idea that hard Brexiteers actually want more... You know, we know that certain people went into the temples, the Sikh temples, and said to them, you know, vote to leave the EU and more people will be coming from India. And it's like, you know, it's just so blatantly dishonest, because this so-called control means fewer immigrants. But actually the government is understanding the benefits of immigration, and I think they're beginning to shift their policy. But I mean, I've got, and it's not just friends that voted for Leave. I mean, people in my own office, two of the young ones in my office, they voted Leave.
Used to work in your office.
No, they still do. They still do. And they had this thing about sovereignty. And stuff that I really don't want to talk about again, because we just, you know, we lost and we had to move on.
But do you sort of banter about it with them? Is there a sort of...
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's quite interesting as to the shift that's going on, because on immigration, for example, they've been horrified by some of the stuff. And so they've said, hang on, this is not what I thought Brexit was all about.
What do they expect?
Well, I know, lovely, but, you know.
OK, there's the lady down at the front, please. We'll get the microphone down here, Pav. Thank you very much.
Given that you seem...
Is that all?
Say, no, sorry.
Oh, yeah.
I would say you seem possibly out of touch with most of your conservative views on various different things. I wonder what your view is on grammar schools. It seems to be very high... Tory
pilot. Well, you might well be right. I might actually be out of kilter on that one. I think that really hacks me off is this idea that grammar schools give you choice. It makes me very angry because the one thing you don't choose to go to a grammar school. You have to pass an exam to go to a grammar school. And I'm somebody who did pass my 11 plus. That's how old I am. And then we went comprehensive after 2 years.
Well, it depends when you passed it. Depends when you passed it.
No, I did. And then we went comprehensive. And this is so, so long ago. You know, for God's sakes, we've moved on. And actually, if you want to know how to improve schools, look at what happened in London. And London schools have improved phenomenally, and they didn't have to introduce the 11 plus to do it. They did it without selection at 11. Selection at 11 is a bad idea, in my opinion.
There you go, straight answer. So the final question, up on the balcony. Have you got the microphone? I think the microphone's still down here. Sorry, Pav. It's the chap up at the balcony. The microphone is coming right at the back. If you just pop your hand up in the air so that Pav can see when he comes up. And as is customary, this is the last question. It will be the best question ever asked.
No pressure.
Here we go.
No pressure.
Thanks for the pressure.
Oh, hold on, Pav's got to turn it on when he gets back down the stairs. sort of Mario game. Okay, here we go.
Okay, that's a lot of pressure. But look, it's wonderful hearing you speak so passionately about immigration and the pros of it and why we should support it. I do think some of the negativities is around lack of integration or a perceived lack of integration. I'd be interested in your thoughts on integration and how we can promote it, how we can enable it better.
Integration what, between...?
With migrant community, with migrants into their communities.
Yeah, I mean, if you go where there are... if you go to places like Boston...
And in Lincolnshire.
Lincolnshire. No, but seriously, that's... Yeah, these... What?
Not in America.
No.
Yeah. But a lot of people have never heard of Boston and Lincolnshire.
Yes, but he didn't think I thought about going to Boston in America, did he?
Anyway. Refer to the UK.
Yeah. Anyway.
I was kidding.
You know, if you go... Anyway, if you were to go to Boston in Lincolnshire, right, just off the A52, yeah, this is my thing about immigration, is that you get that initial thing that says, well, you know, it's all rubbish and there's all these Poles and Latvians and Lithuanians and, you know, there's all these shops. And you go, yeah, they're shops. They've got people in them. So I tell you what, we'll leave the EU, we'll get rid of all these migrant workers, and then what will be in the shops? Nothing. They'll all close. So that sounds like a really good idea. And look, I mean...
Well, potatoes and daffodils at the very least.
Yeah, I know. So, people who've come here... yes, the integration, of course you should integrate. People should get to know other communities and other backgrounds and everything else. And the best thing I can say is go to Leicester. Look at what's happened in the city of Leicester, where there's no one... racial group that is in the majority. And I think things have absolutely worked out in Leicester.
They won the Premier League.
Yeah, exactly. And if you go and watch, do you know one of the great things, and I do actually, because I watch quite a lot of football, and I don't just watch it at home on the telly, but I also try and go to games. I go and watch Notts County. I actually saw them win. First time in 4 years. But if you go to... one of the great things that's happened in Leicester, so you go watch Leicester Tigers, which I do, you'll find very few Asian people are watching Leicester Tigers.
And that's still, the rugby team.
It's a rugby team, and it's still a, pretty much a white sort of game. Go and watch Leicester City, and it's much more integrated. And it's just that thing about we're all Brits, and our heritage and where we've come from is really great and interesting, and you can still be a Brit, and it's just like, God.
And crucially, as you point out, football's better than rugby.
No, if it's good.
All right, let's not get into
that. It's whether it's good, and God, I watch Notts County, and sometimes it's so bad it's not true. But I don't know. I mean, this thing about it, what you don't want is when you have pockets of people, whoever they may be, who keep themselves entirely to themselves. And actually, the biggest problem we have is that there are some parts of Britain where you've got some communities that are totally inward looking. And that's not good. You've got to have, all of us got to be outward looking. And actually, and not just you, I'm not having a go at this guy here, but one of the things that does define Remain over Leavers, and not all, because you can't stereotype, is that it tended to be that if you were a Remainer, you had much more of an open outlook. Whatever your class and background was, you were much more that way. And it tended to be that Leavers were more inward looking and kind of wanted to retreat back to something that we probably never had anyway. And, you know, Remainers were a bit outward looking. So we should all be outward looking and embrace.
What, right now? Group hug at the end of a show. Anna, it has been an absolute treat. Ladies and gentlemen, you're always fantastic, but please give a huge thank you to the wonderful Anna Soubrant.
Man, this, I love going back through all these. It just brings back so many happy memories. And it wasn't that long ago. But as I said with the Keir Starmer one a few weeks ago, 2017 feels like a different decade. I mean, I know it was a different decade, but you know, it feels like it was more than 10 years ago. It feels like people should be studying that in GCSE history or GCSE history already. That is from another time. And Anna Soubry, what a star. So I hope you're enjoying these repeats. As soon as I'm well enough, the live shows will return. But until then, you may not have heard these before. I thought this was a good idea to pick some of my faves. And I'll be back next week with another one. Please leave a 5-star written review. Tell everyone about it. And I'll see you next time. Ta-ra.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.